Welcome to the Gloucester Daily Times for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026, brought to you by the Talking Information Center, located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts. This is your reader, George Krein. Today's lead story, report indicates fatal opioid overdoses dropped to historic low. It's written by Christian Wade, State House reporter, Boston. The scourge of opioid addiction continues to affect Massachusetts. But new data shows the number of fatal overdoses dropped to historic lows last year. There were 978 confirmed or suspected opioid-related deaths in 2025, marking the first time the number of deaths has dropped below 1,000, according to a report released by the State Department of Public Health. That's a 27% reduction in fatal opioid overdoses from the previous year, and a nearly 60% decline since the state's high record of 2,364 deaths in 2022, the agency said. This projected decline represents thousands of lives saved, families kept whole, and communities strengthened, Governor Mara Healey said in a prepared statement. It also represents the tireless efforts of clinicians, service providers, community support programs, and advocates across the Commonwealth who continue to dedicate themselves to this life-saving work. State health officials heralded the new data as a milestone and said the declining number of opioid-related overdose deaths is a direct result of sustained statewide investments in prevention, harm reduction, treatment, recovery support, and community-based wraparound supports. Data show us that providing access to housing, harm reduction, treatment options, and supportive peer communities works to prevent overdose, and the Commonwealth will continue its commitment to supporting and expanding access to these tools and services, Health and Human Services Secretary Kiame Mahania said in a prepared statement. Curbing opioid addiction has been a major focus on Beacon Hill for a number of years, with hundreds of millions of dollars being devoted to expanding treatment and prevention efforts. The state has set some of the strictest opioid prescribing laws in the nation, including a cap on new prescriptions in a seven-day period and a requirement that doctors consult a state prescription monitoring database before prescribing an addictive opioid. Millions of dollars are flowing into the state from multi-state settlements with the opioid makers and distributors, including $108 million from a $5.5 billion deal with the OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma and the former owners, the Sackler family. Under state law, about 60% of those funds will be deposited in the state's opioid recovery fund, while the remainder will be distributed to cities and towns. The state spent nearly $28 million in the previous fiscal year on a range of prevention and treatment services aimed at blunting the effect of opioid addiction, the data shows. That includes $3.4 million in so-called harm reduction services, such as bulk purchases of the overdose-reversing drug naloxone for distribution to local governments and community groups at subsidized prices, and fentanyl test strips that addicts use to test the potency of their drugs. Other funding went to expand medication-based treatments such as mobile methadone delivery programs. Deirdre Calvert, director of DPH's Bureau of Substance Addiction Services, said while the 27% reduction is, quote, encouraging, the state, quote, must never lose sight of the fact that behind every data point is a person, a loved one, a family member, a friend, a neighbor. Nobody is a nobody, and everyone has somebody, she says. Our work is ultimately about people, about saving lives, and about ensuring that every person struggling with substance use knows that they matter and that recovery is possible. Nationally, about 70,000 Americans died of drug overdoses last year, nearly 14% fewer than the previous year, according to the preliminary data from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It was the third straight annual drop in opioid-related fatalities, the CDC said, making it the longest decline in decades. The declining number of Americans dying from opioid overdoses also comes as the Trump administration has ramped up anti-drug trafficking operations with a focus on curbing the flow of deadly fentanyl into the country. Last year, Trump imposed tariffs on the nation's three biggest trading partners, Canada, China, and Mexico, citing the extraordinary threat posed by fentanyl and the country's failure to prevent the drug's flow into the United States. The president has also ordered strikes against alleged Venezuelan drug boats and deployed more military in the Latin American region. Family Medicine to Close Its Doors. It's written by Stephen Hagen, Manchester by the Sea. When Gloucester resident Judith Harold recently tried to make an appointment with her physician's office, she was told the doctor would not be in. Harold was informed the offices of her doctor and other physicians at Family Medicine Associates, part of a medical collaborative, would be closing. "That's what we were told this morning," she said Friday of the attempt to make an appointment at Family Medicine Associates, also known as Beth Israel Lahey Health Primary Care. The facility at 195 School Street, adjacent to Route 128, is a satellite office of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. "I can't think of anything to say," said Harold. "I just don't know. You can't even make sense of it." Harold said patients are scrambling to find the right doctors to oversee their medical needs. Harold, a retired nurse, said there used to be a whole bunch of doctors, but the Manchester office was down to about three practicing physicians. The family practice, Harold said, has seen scores of patients, including children and senior citizens, through the years. "A lot of seniors went there," she said. "I've had a nurse practitioner. She was outstanding." Reached late Friday afternoon, Sarah Finlaw, a spokesperson for the Beth Israel Lahey Healthcare, said Family Medicine Associates will close on August 21st. She said there are several nearby BILH primary care practices that are accepting new patients, including in Gloucester, Beverly, Peabody, and Topsfield. "Our commitment to patients on the North Shore remains strong, and we hope that many patients will be able to continue their care with their current provider at one of the nearby practices," Finlaw said. "We're proud to care for patients in Manchester by the Sea and the surrounding community." Finlaw said patients will be kept in the loop regarding the status of the facility's medical offerings. As the current lease for Beth Israel Lahey Primary Care Family Medicine Associates approaches the end of August, "we took the opportunity to evaluate how best to provide primary care services in the area," she said. "We're focused on making this transition as smooth as possible, and we'll be in touch directly with patients about their care options." In the meantime, Harold said she has already arranged to see a new doctor at Cape Ann Medical Center at 1 Blackburn Drive in Gloucester. "For the longtime Gloucester residents, the commute will be quicker. We're right back where we started," she said, regarding access to her new doctor. But Harold is questioning just why her former medical office closed down. The secretary didn't know why they were closing down," she said. "It's a business decision of some sort." Fire causes significant damage to home. It's written by Stephen Hagen. An overnight two-alarm fire caused by smoking materials left a home on Wolf Hill Road in Gloucester heavily damaged but caused no serious injuries to the two residents or dozens of first responders summoned to the scene. Firefighters got a call at 12:39 a.m. Monday about a house fire in a single-family, single-story home at 10 Wolf Hill Road. As fire crews arrived, smoke could be seen drifting from the roof of the structure. Fire Chief Eric Smith said the fire resulted in pretty significant damage to the home. "It went to a second alarm due to the pretty good involvement of the structure," Smith said. "It started on the outside of the building." Smith said two young men who lived in the home were renting the property and were able to safely evacuate. A dog and two pet birds were also reportedly made it out okay. "Both the residents are okay," he said. "They had a little smoke inhalation. None of the victims that were here that got smoke inhalation went to the hospital. It looks like they got all their pets out, so that's good. On a human factor side, it's been good. There's pretty significant damage to this house." In addition, Smith said no injuries were suffered by firefighters at the scene. "While it started outside, the fire set off the alarms inside and burned its way into the attic and into the structure. After the residents were alerted to the fire, they attempted to extinguish the flames using a garden hose. When they initially got woken up, they tried to put the fire out," he said, "but that little hose just wasn't enough for how much fire they had there." Smith said indications initially showed a possible barbecue had been used the prior evening, but in a press release issued Monday, the Gloucester Department determined that the fire was caused by smoking materials. Most of the interior damage from the fire itself is in that attic space in the wall coming from the outside. He said it looked easy to put out when you first pull up. But once it's eaten into its way into the house, now you're chasing it. Mutual aid units from Rockport, Essex, and Beauport EMS and Rehab 5 officials also responded to the scene. Smith said firefighters were on the scene for several hours fighting the fire and working to dampen hot spots. He said the homeowner was out of state at the time of the blaze, was expected to return to Gloucester sometime on Monday. Makeover eyed for Singing Beach Bathhouse. It's written by Stephen Hagen. Manchester by the Sea residents and a local consultant are working together on a plan to redevelop the Singing Beach Bathhouse. The efforts being made, considered during a recent public forum held at the bathhouse, are part of the Singing Beach Bathhouse feasibility study. Attendees at the May 28 gathering examined the facility and also discussed ideas about the direction for the plan. The first meeting was held at the bathhouse to tour the facility and to brainstorm ideas with the public, said Town Administrator Tony Barletta. The first forum was attended by about 25 people. They shared ideas about what current features needed updating and ways to repurpose existing spaces. So far, Barletta said, no timeline or details about construction have been determined. In addition, he did not yet provide a cost estimate for the project. John Harden of Manchester-based Olson, Lewis, and Architects has been working to eventually develop plans for the site. The next forum will be held on Thursday, June 11th at 6 p.m. when a preliminary design concept is to be presented. Barletta said the bathhouse was built in 1933 and is now 93 years old. This is a first step in assessing the current conditions and vulnerabilities of the bathhouse, said Barletta. In 2025, voters decided to appropriate $25,000 from the Community Preservation Fund for the study. The Olson Lewis firm was hired to facilitate the survey. Ann Harrison, chair of the select board, said two wings of the bathhouse were built in 1963, and they tend to contain a pungent, her quote, pungent odor. The idea is to potentially move the showers outside, she said. In addition, Harrison said suggestions have been made by several residents to have a covered area to eat. At the moment, the snack bar is not able to prepare food, she said. It would be nice if the snack bar could serve hot dogs and hamburgers. John Round, vice chair of the select board, said a timeline and possible cost estimates for the project have not yet been determined. So far, Round said, the focus of the effort has been to gather suggestions from the public. It's all blue sky ideas, said Round. It's a little outdated, and it really needs a facelift on the outside. On the outside, it doesn't look too bad, but it needs a facelift inside and outside. It's part of the fabric of the town. Round suggested Community Preservation Act money could possibly fund the project, but he said it is too soon to discuss specific financing for the work. We're just trying to consider some ideas and how we might be able to practically improve it, he said. A series of public forums have been planned as part of the effort, with project officials encouraging residents to participate in the process. The forums include the following dates: Thursday, June 11th at 6 p.m., with the location to be determined. They better hurry on that, since today's the 9th. During this meeting, representatives from Olson Lewis are expected to present their preliminary design concepts and gather public feedback from the public. Thursday, June 25th, during this gathering, project officials are slated to present the final design concepts. The location and time for this gathering is also to be determined. Reenactors give history lessons at GHS. It's written by Bobby Grady. Battle of Gloucester reenactors brought colonial America to Gloucester High School Monday and taught students about various aspects of colonial life, as well as the battle to be reenacted later this month at Stage Ford Park. As supplies dwindled for the British troops in Boston in 1775, royal officials believed coastal towns such as Gloucester could act as supply hubs. Captain John Lindsay, it's L-I-N-Z-E-E, commanded the 14-gun sloop HMS Falcon along the coast, including waters off Cape Ann, where the Battle of Gloucester took place on August 8, 1775. Reenactors at the high school represented people from both the colonial and British sides and presented details about the battle, clothing and weaponry used at the time to groups of students in 30-minute presentations throughout the school day. Michael Graves portrayed Lindsay, who unsuccessfully attempted to capture two schooners in Gloucester Harbor and burned down the town during the Battle of Gloucester. The battle began when Lindsay saw the two schooners but was met by resistance from the Gloucester militiamen as his men attempted to take one of the vessels. He sent men to go and take the ships, and when the militia responded, Lindsay turned his ship and made the decision to stop bombarding the town because it wasn't working, Graves said. He made the decision to send them, to send landing troops into the town to try and set it on fire. But instead of burning the town, the man in charge of setting Gloucester ablaze only blew himself up. The Gloucester militia was able to drive off the landing parties, and about 20 to 30 of Lindsay's men were captured, Graves said. He ended up losing both the prize ships. He was losing both of the prize ships he was trying to capture. Portraying the local side of history was James Lee, who spoke on the Gloucester militia, comprised mostly of common townspeople ready to take up arms at a moment's notice. Lee showed students what the typical militiaman carried, including a musket, cartridge box, powder horn, and edged weapons such as a sword or bayonet, and other non-lethal equipment such as water canteens and a knapsack. On the day of the Battle of Gloucester, they probably just grabbed their muskets, cartridge boxes, bayonets, and swords, and went down to the wharves to defend the town, he said. Other presentations included the role women played in the battle and how the townspeople reacted and what clothing Royal Navy sailors wore, which some students even got to try on. The full reenactment is slated for June 20th and 21st at Stage Fort Park. For more information, visit battleofgloucester.com. Again, battleofgloucester.com. From an earlier edition, states challenge offshore wind pack. It's from by Michael Norton, Boston. With 7% of the region's energy load arriving from New York, five New England states are banding together in a new lawsuit alleging that federal officials entered an unlawful settlement that resulted in the cancellation of the lease for an offshore wind project that would have supplied power to Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Attorneys general from New York and New Jersey also are among the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which asked the court to strike down a U.S. Department of Interior settlement with the French energy company Total Energies and vacate the lease cancellation. A subsidiary of Total Energies, Attentive Energy, paid $795 million in 2022 to purchase a lease off the coast of New York, part of what Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Campbell's office called the, quote, highest grossing competitive offshore energy lease sale in the United States history. The lease was expected to support wind energy projects to serve New York City and New Jersey. In March 2026, Total Energy signed settlement agreements with the Interior Department to relinquish its Carolina Long Bay lease and its New York BIGHT, B-I-G-H-T, lease, recover the lease fees paid, and invest an equal amount in the development of U.S. gas and power production and exports. At the time, Total Energies said studies on the leases have shown that the offshore wind developments in the United States, unlike those in Europe, are costly and might have a negative impact on power affordability for U.S. consumers. Officials urged to ban retail energy suppliers. Served by Christian Wade, Boston, a coalition of municipal leaders are renewing a push on Beacon Hill to set new restrictions on third-party retail energy suppliers that critics claim are using, quote, predatory tactics to fleece low-income consumers. In a joint statement, a dozen mostly mayors representing communities from Boston to Gardner called on the state legislature to approve a bill that would give cities and towns the authority to block so-called third-party suppliers from enrolling new customers. By letting cities and towns pass their own local measures to block these suppliers from enrolling and renewing customers, the bill will help residents avoid millions of dollars in unexpected electricity costs at a time when high energy prices are already straining household budgets, they said. The The municipal officials, including Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, Salem Mayor Dominic Pangallo, Lynn Mayor Jared Nicholson, and Methuen Mayor DJ Beauregard, are members of the Campaign to Stop Predatory Electric Suppliers, which is leading the push to regulate the industry. House OK's data privacy protections. This is by Christian Wade. Boston, Massachusetts is poised to become the first state to restrict the use of personal information by technology companies as part of a data privacy package working its way through Beacon Hill's legislative process. State House of Representatives approved a bill Thursday that would prohibit companies from collecting more data than necessary for products or services and shield sensitive information like biometric and health data. The state Senate approved a similar version of the Massachusetts Consumer Data Privacy Act in September. The measure, if signed by Governor Mara Healey, would also restrict the use of sensitive data for targeted digital advertising and allow consumers to opt out of having their personal information used to generate targeted ads. House Speaker Ron Mariano said the package of new restrictions will help the state, quote, keep pace with the challenges of an increasingly data-driven world in which technology is embedded in nearly every aspect of daily life. Consumers deserve meaningful protections for their personal information and greater control over how that information is collected, used, and sold, the Quincy Democrat said. This bill establishes common sense safeguards for sensitive data, strengthens transparency, and promotes accountability for entities that profit from personal information, striking an important balance between encouraging innovation and protecting the privacy rights of Massachusetts residents, Mariano added. The legislation was backed by digital privacy advocates who said without the protections, big tech companies will be allowed to collect and manipulate unlimited quantities of personal data about users of social media websites and other online platforms. For too long, data brokers and big tech have been able to gather our most personal information, including our precise location, and sell it to anyone with a credit card, Carol Rose, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union, said in a prepared statement. This landmark bill puts a stop to those abuses, she said. It positions Massachusetts as a leader in protecting personal privacy and curbing digital surveillance. But the changes were opposed by major business groups and the tech industry, which say it goes beyond the bill's original intent to protect consumer data. A coalition of Massachusetts companies wrote to House lawmakers last week, urging them not to approve the changes, warning that the House and Senate proposals, quote, will increase costs, reduce effectiveness, and make it harder for Massachusetts businesses of all sizes to reach the customers necessary to grow. It would hurt our ability to compete against employers in almost every other state, including all our neighbors who are not subject to the same onerous constraints, the coalition wrote. Finally, it sends a clear message that Massachusetts does not want to be the state leading the digital economy, nor the home to future high-tech jobs. In Congress, lawmakers were considering a bipartisan data protection bill last year, but the measure failed to come up for a vote despite clearing a key legislative committee. The tech industry has pushed its own versions of the data privacy laws on a state and federal level. Most would require individuals to correct or delete personal data about themselves and opt out of use of such information for advertising. Differences between the House and Senate versions of the data privacy bill will need to be worked out by a yet-to-be-appointed conference committee before heading to Governor Mara Healey's desk for consideration. Manchester to use $684,260 to extend bike lane connections to schools. It's written by Stephen Hagan. The town is slated to receive several thousand dollars as part of the state legislature's effort to revitalize downtown areas throughout the state. I'm excited to announce that Manchester by the Sea is receiving $684,260 in construction funding through the Shared Streets and Spaces program, said State Representative Andrew Drew Tarr, Democrat of Gloucester. Sue Croft, the town's grants and special projects coordinator, said the town intends to extend the existing School Street bike lane to the Essex Town line at Atwater Avenue. This extension would complete bike accommodations along this corridor and give safe access to both the commuter rail station, located just over a mile from Atwater Avenue, and the Essex Town Line, as well as both the public schools in Manchester, Croft said. This project will improve the corridor that serves the new Cell Signaling Technologies campus and the Manchester Athletic Club to provide safer passage for not only vehicles, but pedestrians and cyclists as well. Croft said the proposed project also includes Upper School Street. The project limits on Atwater Avenue extend from its beginning at School Street to the section where the road forks toward the entrance of the MAC. She said the proposed Atwater Avenue portion of the project will be completely located within the limits of the existing roadway and will have been designed to minimize and avoid impacts to adjacent resource areas. Elements of the proposed school are the extension of the Upper School Street bike lane past Atwater Avenue to the Essex Town Line, installation of new water and sewer utilities within the existing roadway layout, installation of a 1-2 inch concrete fiber mesh liner within the existing steel culvert, roadway paving, and the installation of a new sidewalk. This is the lifeblood of getting around town quickly and safely, Tarr said. The Shared Streets and Spaces program, launched in 2020, is administered by the Massachusetts Department of Transportation. Every municipality and public transit authority in the state is eligible to apply. Applicants must demonstrate that proposed projects can be implemented within 18 months to be considered eligible, and projects must be located on municipally owned property that is accessible to the public. The program has previously made grants to several area municipalities, including Essex, which received $160,000 in 2022, to purchase and install dark sky-friendly pedestrian light fixtures along Main Street in its downtown. Thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times. Visit our website at ticnetwork.org and have a great evening.